Mr. Mayor, I know you told me not to say that. Commissioners, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, I'm Jerry Powell, and I chair the planning committee of the Goose Hollow Neighborhood Association. Franklin Delano Roosevelt said that what we have to fear is fear itself, and I'm thinking about that as I'm speaking to you. Goose Hollow has long sought a URA, and specifically one centered around the more or less the intersection of Southwest Morrison Street and 18th. Why there? It's the center of a sort of institutional black hole in the middle of our neighborhood. And the major institution, of course, is PGE Park, which is a public facility. Very appropriate for its landlord to be spending money on it. And why? Why should you spend money on PGE Park? Because it's the center of an area that has a very high vacancy rate. It has specifically of commercial buildings. It has underused buildings. It has very little public expenditure that's happened in that area in terms of its infrastructure. And it's attracted very little private investment as a result. It's on the west side. It has the unfortunate location of being on the west side of I-405. There's been no public expenditure anywhere near Southwest 18th. Now, there's a proposal that's sort of lurking out there for a URA on this side. It seems to be drawing a lot of fire here this afternoon. Well, there's a lot of private investment that is likely to happen in an area that has had no private investment before. It's a mile and a half or so to the north of Southwest Morrison Street and 18th. It's called Conway. I suppose I'm somewhat speaking out of turn, but we talk with our neighborhood to the north. We participate in each other's planning exercises. And it seems to us, the folks that live and work in that area, that a URA along the corridor of Southwest 18th would create a great deal more economic activity in that area than we could ever possibly entertain without it. Thank you for your time.
Thanks, Jerry. Appreciate it. Is anyone else signed up to testify?
Randy White and Veronica Vernier.
Was it Randy White? What was it? Randy White? Veronica?
We have Brad Perkins on to testify.
Are there others in the audience that did not sign up that wish to testify? Could you raise your hand? So Brad, come forward if you would. Anybody else that wants to testify, please come forward right now. Thank you. Anybody else? Last call. All right. Good afternoon, gentlemen. Oh, here we go. We got a full complement. Good afternoon. Just your name, and we'll give you 3 minutes. Brad.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. What we're talking about here is mainly investment. I haven't heard enough of that comment today, but that's what we are doing right here, making a decision on investment for our future and our children. I think we're very fortunate to have a man like Merritt Paulson being willing to commit to the development of two teams. I have done a lot of real estate in this community. I find it hard to have just small leases, people being willing to give personal guarantees. And he's willing to do a personal guarantee on this venture. And yet, the Portland still maintains ownership of these two stadiums when the new one gets built across the way. And this beautiful piece of architecture, which finally is designed appropriately for the type of venue that needs to go there, and that is soccer. It's a beautiful piece of art, and we're talking about the bowl concept. When we talked about the concept over at the Coliseum, it's another beautiful, it's better than this location, as far as sight lines to the city and having a stadium there that could also be used for outdoor concerts. I appreciate Jay Isaac's comments about room to have an entertainment facility there by the Trailblazers. And, you know, if you really think outside the box and we get together and talk about this as a community, you can see that you can actually build over interstate and connect his property, his being Paul Allen's property along the river, that I am working right now on trying to create a high-speed rail station. There's a bill in the state legislature right now that is trying to bring together a task force for high-speed rail in the valley from Eugene to Vancouver, B.C. And imagine that for a second, a high-speed rail station across the street. What kind of infrastructure would that create in that area? A tremendous amount. When you have basketball, baseball, entertainment district, and major tourism and transportation center right at the heart of the whole region, basically. So think about that in terms of investment, that eventually this city, along with the sports venues and the transportation and tourism dollars that could bring, we're not talking just 300 jobs here, we're talking a tremendous amount more, and maybe we might even have enough synergy over there to have a convention hotel built with private money. Thank you for your time.
Thanks, Brad.
Hello, my name is Kyle Schulein, and thank you for the opportunity to speak. The one intrinsic quality of football is that it appeals to all demographics. It's played because it's accessible, fun, a gentleman's sport, and because it makes some of us feel young again. We are the doctors, the lawyers, the students and teachers, the firemen and cops, the housewives, the tradesmen, the faces you pass on the street. Most of all, we are united. From all walks of life, we come together for this reason. Everyone in this room wearing green understands the risk of investing money in the Timbers. As many of you know, the building of the Timbers Army has been a grassroots campaign funded by the fans. We have paid for T-shirts, scarves, buses to travel to Seattle and vans to Canada. We have produced glasses and memorabilia that could fill a warehouse. We understand the value of a dollar, but we also understand the value of our club. In the time since I've been a Timber supporter, I've lost a home, friends, family, a job, countless dollars. Through all life's variables, the one constant has been my club. The joy I get from watching my club and the take the field is virtually indescribable. The best I can articulate it is to say that when you have the passion of so many in this room and have the countless thousands not and of the countless thousands not present, you carry to a state of euphoria. For 90 minutes, there is no hunger, no war, no poverty, only passion radiating from the stadium downtown, spilling into this glorious city. It is this undying love that we wish to spread.
Thank you very much.
Hi, my name is Adam Smith. I live in Northwest Portland. Today's March 11th. It's my birthday. I'd like an MLS team for my birthday. Thank you.
Birthday. So I'd like to ask Merritt, Ken, and Steve to come back up, fill the three chairs.
Before we close the public testimony, I have a letter that I received from the Northwest District Association that I'd like to enter, like to get copies of, because I think that there was a representative earlier who had to leave.
Okay.
Can I do that?
Sure.
What this letter that I received from the Northwest District Association asks for help with is establish a formal public process for any new urban renewal district, reinforce the Northwest District plan, create a master plan, resolve the remand of the Northwest District plan, commit to a level of transit service, develop an urban design plan, and build parks, green streets, and a community center. And this is all part of the future urban renewal district, but I wanted to enter it into the record.
Appreciate that. So, Steve, Ken, Merritt. So, I know Commissioner Fritz flagged to me. She has some questions.
On the funding, where does the $2.5 million potential cost overrun come from?
$2.5 million currently resides in the Spectator Facilities Fund as part of the capital reserve that we have there. So those monies are already held by the city in that fund.
But isn't the capacity, I read in one of the reports that the bonding capacity of the Spectator Fund is $25 million and we're committing to pay $31 million in bonds? Is there a limit to the number of things that the Spectator Fund can do?
I don't know which numbers that you're looking at, Commissioner, but I know that there have been a lot of different work going on and some changes in numbers over the last few weeks. The number range was smaller to begin with, after some refinement and looking at some changes in the excise tax, moving it from 6% to 7%, and other changes, that number now looks like, with a particular margin that we have a debt service coverage, I think a 1.25 times annual debt service, that we feel comfortable that a $31 million figure could be supported based on the projection of revenues that we've been working with Merritt and his group, and the projection of revenues of the for the other Rose Quarter facilities. There is a limit, but that we believe that that could be financed.
And I would add to that that we believe it can be expanded through employing some tax exempt structures as well. And that's going to take some time to look through, but we think it could be larger than $31 million.
Could you tell me more about what you mean by that?
Utilizing tax exempt financing structures, which would enable us to expand.
Okay. So I asked you earlier about the potential interest rate on the borrowing.
Mm-hmm.
At what point does the interest rate get so high that we don't have the capacity to, that the Spectator Fund can't cover it?
Well, there certainly is a limit as to what we can afford, and I don't know what that particular limit is now. Obviously, that would be something we'd be negotiating with whoever is the potential purchaser of the bonds, whether it's done as a public offering or as a private placement. We haven't really worked through the details and enough information to be able to market the bonds to anybody. But based on our prior experience and in talking to some underwriters that we've worked with in urban renewal districts, we're probably looking at that kind of a range. And that kind of a range of numbers that we've been running with still produces the $31 million and the $18.5 million of TIF, for example.
And what's the total interest projected interest payment over the life?
I don't have those particular figures in front of me. We have those debt service schedules, and we can get those to you if you're interested in seeing that.
I am, because we're borrowing money. We're paying interest that we wouldn't otherwise be paying on. And then am I correct in understanding that in 2017 we start paying off the debts from the Rose Garden, and then we would get, I think it was said, $4 million per year into the Spectator Fund?
Yeah, my understanding is that the last year of debt service on the existing obligations is 2017. At that point, all that money just flows into the Spectator Facilities Fund and is not a debt service payment.
Correct. And the Spectator Facilities Fund is unrestricted, that the council could use that $4 million for other things after we've taken care of the responsibilities in the Spectator Fund?
Including the bonds that are currently outstanding for PG Park, which do not mature until, and their final maturity there is 2024.
So we're paying off in 2024. So is this like taking out second loans on both facilities?
Well, I mean, if you the way to think of it, when we started the Spectator Facilities Fund, it was really one facility. It was the Rose Garden. And then a few years later came the opportunity to develop PGE Park. And rather than treating these as sort of standalone project financings, which is the way oftentimes these are thought about in the public finance realm, is that we said, you know, it makes sense to combine the facilities. What we really have is a system of public facilities that operate together, and that those revenues that are available for those combined facilities can help each other during lean times and good times. And that's actually turned out to be a very effective strategy. And also is a way for us to think about planning new development at those for those facilities or other kinds of facilities, is having a system of revenues available to do that is a really good way to build upon that going into the future. So the fact that we're issuing more bonds now backed by those same set of revenues, when you think of it as a system, it's really not an unusual financing structure at all. In fact, it's exactly what we do with the city's water system and the city's sewer system and the city's parking system.
Okay, and then I want to return, I don't know if any of you are the right person to answer this question, but returning to my question about whether the debt that we're adding or the borrowing that we're adding to the Oregon Convention Center district, do we then have to add another $4 million or whatever for affordable housing, another 26% on top of that?
What we envision is that the 4.8 would be taken care of as part of creation of the urban renewal district on the west side. And we do, each district, given the what's there, we do sort of average out the 30%, but not every district has 30%. Okay. So I just want to be clear that the Spectator funds is derived from ticket sales and rent and parking associated with spectators going
Correct.
To facilities.
Correct.
So it is sports and facility users that are paying that and would then be helping to finance this deal.
And the only other item I would add to that, Mayor, is the money we received from the Visitor Development Initiative.
Can you comment or somebody comment on Ms. Lansing's statements around the OCC? Because it was different than you told us in the sort of the beginning of this hearing.
You mean Shelley Lorenzen?
Sorry, Shelley.
Yeah. Well, if I wrote it down, and she raised a couple of different points, and she raised the issue that I think she said she didn't disagree with the way I had phrased or described it, but that there is a choice between projects, and if we didn't build the stadium, what else could we build? That's a fair question. If we could access the tax increment revenue through a zero coupon structure, what other kinds of things could we do? That's a question to ask. The stadium is a project that's ready to go. It's to use the overused phrase shovel ready. It's a project that we know about. We have a partner ready to move it forward. But that's a choice council has to make. Mm-hmm. The other question she said is if the district went away, would the tax dollars would be released? And so the fact that even though it doesn't deprive any taxing jurisdiction now, if you didn't have the urban renewal district, all that money that's currently locked up would go away. Well, that's certainly true, and that was certainly true in 1998 when the city was faced with a decision about how it wanted to treat that urban renewal district. And at the time, that district and three other districts, we looked at the urban renewal plans and we said, in order to complete what's in the urban renewal plan and to execute them as developed originally, we can choose to limit the amount of tax increment revenue is going to collect. And that should be sufficient to fulfill those plans. And it's fair then to release all additional increment to the taxpayers. And that's what we've done. And so we actually made a decision in 1998 that, in effect, put that into motion, which has said we have enough money to exercise and realize those plans. We don't need any more, and it's fair to release that. And so, in effect, that decision really validates what her concern is about how we approached that back in 1998.
One final clarifying question for the moment, until I turn over to others, is have we been able to estimate the benefits to the county, the city, school district, and the port from creating increment in the OCC?
We haven't done that. I don't know if there's been any analysis of that specifically.
Okay.
Well, I did. As a matter of fact, I was reading from a document prepared by the PDC that says that when the district was created, was that 98?
That was when the district was formed before that, Commissioner. That 1998 is when we made a decision about whether it was going to be an option 1, 2, or 3 district.
Okay, but whenever it was formed, the value in the district that was at that time was $5.3 million, and $10.4 million has been released to all the governmental entities, the city, the county, and the school district.
Others? Commissioner Saltzman.
I'm looking at item 4.5 in the agreement. It says the city will use best efforts to identify by August 1st possible methods to bridge finance the TIF bonds for PGE Park should such bridge financing be required. So what does that mean?
It's like the interstate.
It's the interstate program.
Yeah, I think the idea here is that if we and a lot of this is how do we start this thing before we have maybe a decision on the urban renewal district, knowing that we would need to have funds in place really to be able to execute and move forward if we wanted to stay on a particular time schedule. Really, the only viable option that I can see is for the general fund to do some sort of short-term borrowing, similar to what we've done in other urban renewal districts, primarily North Interstate. But I think that's a question that council has to decide whether it's comfortable with that, because clearly, the ability to do a short-term borrowing is predicated on having a strong sense of a secure takeout financing. And if there's any question about the security of that takeout financing, then the council would probably want to consider something different or not want to move forward on that time schedule.
So the should such bridge financing be required is more or less saying that we would expect a new URA to be in place prior to August 1st. Is that...
I'm not sure that that's the intent. I think that the intent there is if you wanted to move this forward and council decided that it understood that it would need to have other subsequent acts to occur, but it wanted to maintain a particular schedule which would require bridge financing now where it may not require it or may require it at a different time into the future, that we would look at those things and we would find ways in order to do that. I think that it puts that kind of question in front of the council to determine whether they want to move the project forward on the current time schedule or not. And I didn't write the language. Steve, you may have some other insights into that as well.
You'll notice the language simply says that we will identify ways to do this if possible. It doesn't commit us to do this. It's entirely the council's ultimate decision as to whether or not we would use such bridge financing or whether we would simply delay going forward.
But if I could just remind myself on the interstate urban the financial pledges that the city council at the time had to make related to projects on New Columbia and on light rail in North Portland, I think that we would want to be in a position to at least have a very good idea of how the bridge financing is going to be taken out. That's your point, mm-hmm. I think. So on the what became the Interstate Urban Renewal District, there was council support for eventually creating that, even though they knew it would take months longer to actually implement it. Is that fair?
That's fair, Commissioner. I can't remember exactly the sequence of timing. I think there clearly the environment that we were dealing with urban renewal formation was a bit different then than it is now. There are some, you know, new issues that the city has to be mindful of. But ultimately, we got comfortable, we the finance folks got comfortable with the idea of committing the city before even the district was formed or as the district was being formed, because the district was a very large geographical area, largely residential. And because of the mechanics of the property tax system, even if no new increment was created in the form of new development, just the natural inherent 3% or so growth on the underlying base would provide sufficient capacity within a five-year time period to be able to take the $30 million obligation out, which is, in fact, what happened.
And so is our okay.
Go ahead.
The interstate was, like you said, primarily residential, mm-hmm. which, you know, is kind of more predictable, property values. But this proposed URA, though I don't profess to understand the whole boundaries of it, but from what I gather, it's largely commercial and multifamily. Does that hinder or how does that affect assumptions about natural property assessment valuation?
A couple things. One, I don't know exactly the boundaries of the district yet and the size and the acreage and things like that. And all those are factors that come into play, Commissioner. The commercial and the multifamily, you know, operate more like residential as opposed to industrial, which is valued very differently. So I think some of those things that were present in the interstate model, for example, would apply here. But again, acreage size and things like that are important as well. Also, there, you know, I know that there has been done some work been done to look at how long it would take to take this financing out with some projections of increment in that district and new things that might happen. And I was the numbers I've seen suggest that it would be within 5 years that that could happen. So similar to interstate.
And we could size the district and choose the boundaries based on some informed or based on information that gives us a sense of more or less security, right?
Yeah, and also most importantly is what is it that you're trying to achieve overall with that district and where are those areas of need that you're trying to address, not just this particular project, but the other kinds of things that were discussed today.
Merritt, what happens if we can't meet, you know, all the financing stuff in place by September?
And the deal won't go through.
Okay. Other questions?
Another question about a different urban renewal area study, the North Northeast Economic Development Study. Do you know about that, Ken, or do we need
I'm not familiar with that, Commissioner.
Do you know about that, Mayor? I'm sure you do know about that, Mayor Adams. The North Northeast study that was looking at mm-hmm. other redistricting, other boundaries, other
yes.
ways. So could you tell us about that?
Well, it's like the conversation on creation of a new urban renewal district. It's largely among staff and myself, and some folks in the community. But one of the options for getting more resources to the community of North and Northeast is the potential for redrawing the boundaries for interstate to include more of North and Northeast and potentially the OCC. It would either supplement the existing OCC Urban Renewal District side by side geographically, or it might take it over. And we're looking at now in terms of the long-term needs of both North and Northeast and what that doing that might compete against in terms of projects that are already on the books in the interstate urban renewal area. So the conversations are still very, very early.
But though it would include possibly part of the Argonne Convention Center district?
That has not been part of the discussions that I've been part of, but I don't know who else is saying that. I'm not talking.
I thought you just said that.
The Oregon Convention Center District goes up MLK, a long ways up MLK. So it would include the portion that's outside of the Rose Quarter Convention Center area north.
And is any of the available maximum indebtedness needed for, might it be needed for that new North-Northeast District?
The proposal that we have on the table does not compete against any existing projects.
And is it acreage neutral? Or is it proposing to expand the acreage?
On the interstate, the potential interstate? We're not, if we remove the OCC district and then add back interstate, we're not at that level of sophistication yet in our discussions.
Because I guess why I'm raising this concern is if we're talking, we have a very limited amount of land left to that we are allowed. We're only allowed 15% of our land to be in the urban renewal districts. So I'm wondering, since we're being asked to make this decision, what other areas are being considered for potentially adding acreage?
Well, becoming to council as part of PDC's budget process, one of the things we're considering is decommissioning 1,000 acres of urban renewal in Airport Way. And there's also the possibility to look at the size of the existing Willamette URA. So we're looking at you know, resizing, coming back to council with a proposal to sort of offering various resizing options to make sure that we stay within our 15%. Any other discussion? All right, thank you, gentlemen. Council discussion.
Well, I guess I think what, you know, most concerns me about this package, there's a lot to like about it and the partnerships that brought this forward, but I am concerned about our impact on general funds of the city or the county and the school districts and ourselves. But more important, without a sort of full consultation, open dialogue that really, I think, right now the county and the school district are not feeling has happened. I don't feel it's happened either with them. So I think in the spirit, you know, it's hard to sit down and have a full open dialogue when you're telling them, let's have the dialogue, but you're already on the hook for $15 million, and we're going to go ahead and form this urban renewal area. You know, we may quibble about the shape or the maximum indebtedness, but it's going to happen. And, you know, I guess I'm sort of the mind that, you know, we need a new covenant with the county and the school districts around new urban renewal areas. We need to make them full partners. That doesn't necessarily mean they have a veto power, but they need to be full partners, and they need to feel like that. And, you know, all this marriage analogies walking around here, you know, we're not married yet with Peregrine, but we are, in my mind, you know, married to the school districts and how they succeed, and to the county and how important it succeeds. We are looking at, you know, unusual times, to say the least, a $45 million hole in the county's general fund, $14 million in the school district's general fund. These are indeed unusual circumstances, and I don't feel comfortable moving ahead on the new URA commitment of $15 million without having that process occur and having them all on board with forming a new urban renewal area. So, as I said, there's a lot to like about this agreement, and I appreciate you know, Mayor Paulson stepping to the deal. I appreciate all the work Commissioner Leonard and Mayor Adams have done on this, but I would suggest and make a motion to remove the $15 million from a new TIF area from the financing plan.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded.
So let me speak.
Discussion?
Let me speak to that. I know a lot that has been represented specifically by Multnomah County, to be kind, has not been accurate about URAs. And it disturbs me deeply. Not that there are broader discussions in the community about misperceptions about URAs, but coming from people that know better. And it disturbs me greatly, because I think, as I've demonstrated here, and I just did that sitting here off the top of my head, the dollars I could remember that we've committed to the county and the school district. And to hear, frankly, the response I did was not satisfying. So Commissioner Saltzman, I just have to say, I just have to believe you know better than that we are not good partners with the county. We have been outstanding partners with the county, and when they've had needs, we've stepped up to the plate. But though I feel strongly about that, I'm also a political realist. And I hope I retain the capacity to look at the bigger goal when I'm working on a project than to get mired in what I consider to be details that can be worked out later. I'm not married to where the $15 million comes from. I will tell you, even if this passes, I intend to have another discussion, if this passes, about the appropriateness of there being an urban renewal district around PGE Park, and about the true numbers that that the $15 million would represent in terms of the increased economic activity that will happen if you have Major League Soccer there, because there are benefits that particularly the county gets that don't show up in just property tax dollars. But I will vote for this in the interest of moving this forward in order to live to fight another day. But I will just say to those listening, and particularly the county, I've had a radical readjustment in my approach to what we've done to fund the county after the exchange I heard here today. And it's going to – future discussions are going to be realistic discussions. They're going to be discussions that are less about campaign slogans and positioning and more about real impacts and real economic development and what we actually have achieved with the really outstanding work that has made Portland be the city that it is today. So I hope each of us are willing – I guess I'm trying to say I hope nobody makes up their mind as to, because it's been represented to us, how it is that we use urban renewal dollars, that that is, in fact, the case. No. I think the facts are a lot different than that, and I would like to have that broader discussion after we have this debate.
Right, and I'm not trying to say that, you know, I think there's a lot of discussion about sort of who benefits whom. And those are fair discussions, and the benefits analysis associated with those are all fair points. But our partners, you know, the ones we're married to right now, are not feeling good. And I'm saying when it comes to affecting their general funds at this point in time, I want them to feel good about this and to be supportive of this. And I think in the past, the city has been, you know, and I served on the Urban Renewal Advisory Group that helped come up with the River District Amendments, the David Douglas Urban Renewal Era. And, you know, I just think in the past, the city has been a little too, and I'm not pointing any fingers at anybody, but our tone in general has been a little too patronizing towards the city and the county when it comes to urban renewal. Is how can you possibly doubt the benefits in the long term? And right now, this may have the benefits in the long term, but I think they're operating on a very short-term focus, which is a $35 million hole in their general fund, a $14 million hole in the school's general fund. And I think, you know, as visionary and FDR-like as I may want to be, or we all want to be, you know, I'm focused on short-term and the feeling that partners that ought to be our partners in this aren't at the table, and they're feeling hurt.
All right. So, Ben, you had your
– whether there's another option?
You're trying to get my attention?
Mr. Mayor, I'm just trying to get a sense of, in particular, the motion and how it affects the
Well, that's what I'm
agreement.
Just about to do with so. Mr. Janik here. Can you show where – I, too, want to make sure we memorialize this appropriately in the actual document. Where would we – or would we change in the document to reflect this motion if it passes?
I think you would go to page 2, the funding plan, section 3.1, and you would, in the sources of funds, delete the words TIF bonds for PGE Park and insert the words to be decided.
Yes.
Okay.
That's exactly what I have in mind.
All right.
As I look through the rest of the document, I don't believe there is anything else that would need to be changed.
Legislative intent is if it shows up somewhere else, it'll be changed to reflect that. Any other discussion on council?
Well, didn't Mr. Paulson say that without the $15 million,
what this
he
means,
doesn't want to move forward with it?
Well, I think what this means is we still have to meet, in order for this deal to go forward with definitive documents, there's a $15 million hole in terms of resources not identified. It is, whereas before we had identified potential source of resources that did not exist either. So this makes it, this gives less direction from council, but it does say for this to move forward, we need to come up with $15 million. We need to identify the source for $15 million. So any other discussion?
And to be clear, I would want that to also include a more deliberative, thoughtful discussion about this URA and this $15 million coming from a proposed URA.
So it's my job to put together a proposal for council and the county and the school districts to come up with a thoughtful process, and we'll return to council to do this, that. Is there anyone that wishes to testify on this proposed amendment? Good answer. Sue, would you please call the roll?
Fritz. So we're now voting on the amendment to remove the $15 million from the URA, the urban renewal area that doesn't exist yet. And I applaud
Correct.
That. That takes care of one of my concerns, which is the process for agreeing on with our partners what's in an urban renewal district, and indeed whether or not we should have an urban renewal district by PGE Park. So I'm assuming, Mayor, that we're going to continue to discuss the overall.
You're voting, so I can't say anything.
Okay, never mind. I'll just make that assumption.
Yes.
It doesn't entirely take care of all of my concerns, but it does take care of part of them, so aye. Fish.
Well, I appreciate the discussion on urban renewal because there's probably no commissioner currently more impacted by the effects of uncertainty about how we do urban renewal than I as the housing commissioner, since the bulk of the city priorities, which I currently am in, well, transportation notwithstanding.
PDC.
The people that don't have the time to wait for this to be resolved, the people who live on the street, are, the most impacted. And so I want to just first of all say that I support the motion, and I also support what my good friend Commissioner Leonard has said about a broader discussion on urban renewal, because I believe it's a little off track, but for other reasons. And I think we've got to get it back on track, because if we don't, it may get taken away from us. So on this, I vote aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
And I appreciate the sentiment of Commissioner Fish. I, for a long time, have kind of delayed this discussion, thinking that that those that I consider to be very bright and able public servants to frankly know better. And maybe this is a good opportunity to finally broach the entire issue, sit down, have some real economic analysis done that includes all of the impacts, a positive and negative, of urban renewal areas, how the dollars are spent, what kind of businesses are created, what kind of property tax it generates, what kind of income tax it generates, what kind of business license fee and county business income tax it generates, and have a true, honest discussion. And so I think that this might be a good thing in many ways. But I expect to have a good discussion about this again as we try to figure out how to identify the other $15 million that needs to be identified in what I consider to be an outstanding, if not unique, package that benefits the city. Aye.
Adams.
So in a spirit of compromise, I'm going to support this as well. It means that we need to come up with the $15 million one way or another in the timeline stated in the term sheet. Aye. Okay, amendment passes. I think we're now on a vote. Unless there's additional council discussion, we're now on a vote of the main motion.
Did you have another comment you wanted to make?
Well, I can make it as part of my vote. Okay. Thank you.
Sue, would you please call the roll?
Fritz.
Well, thank you all for coming. Thank you for staying. This is my Leeds United scarf, which I started wearing when I was as little as Lucy Menegello. I think I probably watch more professional soccer games than anybody on this council, perhaps anybody in this room. And that was something that growing up was really important to me. We are not debating here the wonder of soccer as a world sport. And I'm saying as a world sport. I've actually got all of my scarves here. I've got my Liverpool scarf. No, really. Which I wore at the European Cup final in 1978, which I was interested to find when Googling online was said a bit dull. That was beyond it. This is my Forfar Athletic scarf, which I started supporting in college because they were the worst team in the Scottish second division. But then after we started supporting them, they started doing better, which didn't make it any fun at all. And I have various other scarves. But I'm not making my decision today based on whether soccer is a great sport or not. I'm making it whether it's the best economic use of both our city space and our city dollars. And that's the question before me. It's not, is this a wonderful thing for Portland and for the people who go to the games? I love sports. I love high school sports. I love college sports. That's not the question that I'm being asked to vote on today. I'm being asked to vote on the dedication of millions of dollars of taxpayers' money. And I ran last year for 14 months talking about basic services in all 95 neighborhoods. And this increased debt capacity would take away money from those neighborhoods because it doesn't let the Oregon Convention Center district expire as quickly as it otherwise would. It means that we continue to borrow. And we're in really bad shape in our city. We spent yesterday, the whole day, in heartbreaking reviews of our city bureau's budgets and how little money we have this year. And I would have to say that our staff's projection of how long this recession, depression is going to be was optimistic. And I was particularly chilled to hear a review that the Great Depression, which started in the late 1920s, didn't end until World War II and military spending. So while I hope that we are not in that place right now, there's certainly a possibility that we could be still very much hurting for money in 2017 when we could get $4 million in spectator fund resources that would be coming back into the general fund for our availability. I would like to see, before I can support something in the Rose Quarter, I want to know what is the highest and best use of the space in the Rose Quarter. There was the study that I mentioned in 2001 with the Rose Quarter redevelopment study. If I could just find that. Hang on a second, it's really good. Okay, so the 2001 Rose Quarter Urban Design and Development Strategy said that the Rose Quarter is currently a place to go for events or to access transit, but not to work, live, and recreate. It said a ballpark is by its very nature large in scale and not utilized on a daily basis. It is not the kind of development contemplated within the vision. So I was listening to Jay Isaac of the Trailblazers talking about the potential impact of the use of that space for a minor league baseball stadium that would be empty most of the week and most of the year. And listening to him talk about $230 million in private investment that went into building the Rose Quarter, with 2.5 million people coming to that quarter, and yet the three restaurants there have gone bust. So if we're expecting Major League Soccer and Minor League Baseball continuing in Portland to revitalize our economy, I need to see some better numbers. The Economic Development, the Economics Research Associates study on which the task force based their report was dated July 30th, 2008, which is obviously before the crash, and it projected costs for the stadium, which have already gone up by $9 million. There's already $2 million more from last month as to what the projected costs of these stadia are. So I need to know more about what are the other proposed uses of the Rose Quarter? How many jobs would we get from them? How much vitality would our city get serviced by? What are some of the other choices? Obviously, all of you here, or many of you here, would like to see Major League Soccer at PGE Park, and I think that that could be done. Then we need to find a place for Minor League Baseball. Does that have to be on some of our city's most valuable property, near the river, on transit? I just question the economics of this proposal, and so I can't support it in its current form. If I had some more information, I might be able to, but for right now, I see that it takes money away from basic services in neighborhoods and doesn't add it. Nay.
Fish.
A fact to follow. So let me begin with my disclaimer. I don't think there's a person in this room that loves soccer more than I do. And my wife and I are having a little disagreement tonight because, like everyone else, we're trimming our sails a little bit. And she found that she could cut our Comcast bill in half, and with it came Channel 401, which is the soccer channel, which was canceled. So we're going to have to find a way to put that back. And if this succeeds, I'll be the first one to buy season tickets, and I'll take my daughter, who is my pride and joy and is a budding soccer player. And as everyone in this room knows, as the Parks Commissioner, I've made one of my three commitments to the city, a commitment to make sure that our children have recreational facilities, fields, and recreational facilities which are as good as their suburban counterparts, because, frankly, we're shortchanging our children in this community. I've thought a lot about this deal and I've concluded that you know, at this stage of the process, this very well may be the best deal that we can get under the circumstances. And on that note, I want to acknowledge the leadership of Mayor Adams and Commissioner Leonard. And I also want to say that after reading about Randy Leonard's negotiating skills in the newspaper, I'm ready to send him as our special envoy to the Middle East, because I think we could fix
a few. I might start a war, too. You never know.
There'll be peace. There'll be war. There'll be something in between. Randy said something interesting earlier. He said, apropos of urban renewal districts, he said that he felt that he was cast in the unlikely position of defending an urban renewal district in this case, since he has been one of the more public critics of the way of past urban renewal decisions. Well, you can imagine how I feel as someone who is absolutely passionate about soccer, cast in the role of being a skeptic about a plan that has a lot going for it and that a lot of time and energy has gone into it. I want to begin by expressing my appreciation for Mr. Paulson's willingness to make a significant investment in our community. And as we've got to know each other over time, I've even warmed to his style of negotiating. But I know he is sincere in wanting to bring something positive to our community. And I want to acknowledge the Timber Army. I've seen the Timber Army at work at PG Park, but I've also seen them pump up the volume at the at Merlot Field when the Timbers were playing the UP Men and creating a festival atmosphere. After listening to the testimony today and after reviewing the documents we got this morning, I know there are passionate arguments in this room as to why we should do this deal. And so for me, this is a very tough call. I look out at people like Drew Mihalik, who has spent his professional life trying to make us a bigger time sports venue, and whose judgment I respect greatly. And Sean Levy, who, when he isn't making a complete fool of himself at soccer games, usually is setting the pace for movies I go to. And for Dan Levy, who's part of the lobbying team, who, frankly, truth be told, there would not be a new Columbia today if he had not made it a priority when he worked with Senator Smith. To the youth soccer people in this room who care about youth soccer the way I do and want to make sure our kids get the best. To my friends in labor who justifiably, rightfully so, see this as a potential stimulus package. You know, I have taken all that into consideration, and I've had some very tough conversations, particularly with Randy, because I am not in the habit of not listening very carefully to his well-reasoned arguments on issues. And we have agreed and disagreed, but we have always spent time working through our differences. So this may be the best deal that we can negotiate as of today, but the question for me as a city commissioner and not as a fan is whether this is the right deal for Portland. And after much thought and reflection, I have decided that Major League Soccer is not the right priority for today. In this tough economy, I believe we need to strengthen the safety net for our homeless and seniors and veterans and people with disabilities. I believe we need to protect basic services for everyone in our community. I believe we need to provide safe and affordable housing and to support our neighborhood small businesses. That we need to be good custodians of our parks and our natural areas, and that we need to invest in a quality education for all of our citizens. In my judgment, there is an insufficient connection between these community priorities and betting the house on Major League Soccer. Now, before we even cast a vote here this morning, the Oregonian warned in an editorial that a no vote will move Portland in the direction of Nowheresville. And I respectfully disagree. To me, the test of whether Portland is a major league city or not is our collective commitment to great parks and great schools, great housing, great jobs. Investments in these priorities will ensure that we continue to be a major league city. Respectfully, I vote no.
Saltzman?
Well, I want to thank everyone for enduring. I want to thank the task force for their recommendations, which I think are excellent. My appreciation for Mayor Adams and Commissioner Leonard's efforts, and my appreciation for Merritt Paulson and his commitment to Portland and our unique and very
public way of discussing important civic projects. And I want to thank the Timbers Army. I'm very impressed, and I think I've always known about you as an advocacy organization, but I'm also impressed by the compassion and caring that you show for your fellow members, and that's nice. I really like that. And I think this is a good deal, with one major exception. It's complex, but it does, on a par, it keeps the city's general fund protected. But as I stated earlier, my concerns relate to the impact of forming a new urban renewal area and its associated impacts on the city and school, I mean the county and school districts general funds at this juncture in time. I don't want to rule out the possibility that we can come to terms with those two organizations about a new urban renewal area. It may not be possible, but I think that's what I'm allowing for in my amendment, is that possibility, or to find $15 million from somewhere else. But I do want to say that if we go into discussions with the county and the school district, we can't do it sort of with the old, like I said, there has to be a new covenant, and we have to respect one another and not sort of act like we know what's best for you. And not, you know, to the extent the discussions become global, they're less likely to produce a consensus in a short period of time, which I think we do have a window of time here. So I do want to see those discussions continue and see if there is a, you know, the win-win-win between those three jurisdictions. And so I'm going to support this resolution as amended. I'm going to support the resolution as amended, but also, again, there's still a $15 million hole that has to be figured out. So, again, I vote aye.
Leonard.
Well, I have appreciated the discussion here today. I appreciate each of my colleagues' perspectives. You know, there, it has been pointed out to me by a number of folks, there is some irony about my position on this issue, given what some remember as my very clear opposition to the final vote on the tram. And as I remind people all the time, but they don't seem to hear, is as Al Gore famously said once, I voted for it twice before I voted against it. I voted for it at $14 million. I voted for it at $40 million. But when I got the $56 million, I gagged, and I couldn't vote for it. Some have interpreted that to mean that I'm opposed to projects that require looking at the bigger picture. I argued then, as I would tell you now, that I think there's a balance that one takes to any project. And I'm as unafraid as the next person of making bold decisions, but within reasons. This project really in many ways was molded by my experience with the tram, my first experience arriving on council when I'd known, of course, Steve Janik about him for a long time, but I was thrust into his company immediately upon arriving at the council because the PFE deal was disintegrating. And I was fortunate enough to arrive here right in the middle of that. And I never forget him telling me, and he probably doesn't even remember this, he said, I was trying to figure out how the deal could have disintegrated from the place where it had been characterized as such a great deal just a short time earlier. And he said to me, we negotiated too good of a deal. That never left me. I always remembered that as a very wise observation on his part, and it stuck with me right up to and including when we sat down with Merritt to begin negotiating this deal. And so those two experiences, more than anything, actually formed the backdrop, at least for me, in the approach I took in discussing along with the mayor this deal with Merritt. Some have said that this is the wrong time to do this deal. I happened to be right in the middle, just completely coincidentally, of reading a biography of FDR called "Traitor to His Class," and it's interesting that that the arguments in the book that are thrust against FDR in doing the things that he did to stimulate the economy are really parroted today on the national level by what Barack Obama is doing, and in a very micro scale, what we're debating here today. And that is doing what may appear to be, to many people, a counterintuitive. Taking on public debt to create public works that help people get back to work. But more importantly, and real specifically to this deal, I don't believe in another economic environment we would have the deal in front of us that looks the way that it does. As good as it does, I don't think Merritt would have agreed to some of our conditions if he knew our financial health was better. So I think this is actually exactly the right time for this deal. And I just have to say that, you know, I don't want to just get too myopic about this subject, but I do feel a need to publicly begin speaking out more than I have about this whole issue of the urban renewal areas, and is this the right time to make these kinds of decisions? And I just have to say that we wouldn't have the resources we do today to fund the projects that we have to fund today and the services we do today if there weren't urban renewal areas in the past. We are benefiting as we sit here in the amount of money we have and the amount of money the county has, and I'll have to say this, the amount of money the school has, by other bold decisions by prior councils. And it is frustrating to me to have a discussion with people that I otherwise greatly respect from the county who seem intent on mischaracterizing a program that has allowed this community to be as great as it is, and God willing, will allow us to be even greater in the future if we preserve those very precious tools. But Commissioner Saltzman's right. We have to be careful. We have to balance those interests. And I'm not only capable, but very focused on making sure that happens. But I guess the bottom line for me is that future generations of city council members will benefit in the future from the decision this city council makes today, as we have benefited from prior generations of city council members. One of the problems with being clear about where you're at is I'm not going to get the ovation that Commissioner Saltzman just got, and I'll just give you a nice quiet aye. Okay, I'll take it.
Adams?
Well, I want to thank Skip Newberry in my office, who worked tirelessly on this deal. And when I asked him, because he was putting in long hours, you know, he's a relatively new member of my team. I said, I really appreciate your passion for the work. And he says, I can be very passionate about this deal because of the kind of deal that it is. Also, I want to thank Ty and Ken Russ, Steve Janik, David Logston, Roy Kaufman, and others. I want to thank Steve Masser and the folks on the task force. They put in a lot of hours, very difficult. I want to thank our great private partner, Merritt Paulson and the Paulson family. I want to make sure that everyone hears, and that especially Commissioner Saltzman, that I get the message on the new covenant. And as a new mayor, I'm committed to leading that effort. I've got a great working relationship with the school districts and with the county. And I think that your aspirations for improvement on that relationship and sort of joint decision-making on that is well-placed, and I take that on. I do think, though, as Commissioner Leonard has alluded to, that while those concerns are well-placed with the county, I also think there has been overreaching in terms of how those concerns are portrayed and the trade-offs that have been described. For me, this is like imagine if you would, for every dollar spent on federal stimulus, if there was a private sector partner that matched it with, you know, between 40 and 50 cents and guaranteed another 20 cents. Now, those numbers are off because I haven't done the math, but You know, the federal stimulus, which is very, very popular, is pure government spending. And this is government spending with debt, as Commissioner Leonard described, but it's also with a private sector match. This is not the end. This is actually the end of the beginning in our work, and we have a lot.